Whoa, hi, Gala.
Hey, what's up?
You know, just here in the spring of our discontent.
Mm-hmm.
Every season, huh?
Yeah, I guess it's like we're just in a discontent, and then it's like, it'll be, I'm just going to say the same thing you said, but back to you.
We're going to make this content in discontent.
Stupid.
Yes, I am. You're welcome. Hi, everybody. How is it? Eclipses. Woo! Mercury retrograde. Hey!
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. Did it fix everything? No.
I mean, it's still like the effects of something like that. They linger for a while and they build up for a while, don't they, Rose?
I mean, I think they do. I don't agree with Richard Tarnas on everything, but I do agree with... He and Liz Green and Howard Sisportis and a lot of the older folks who I read and think about do have an idea around this kind of 15-degree orb on either side of the way that outer planet conjunctions kind of build. And one second, my 18-pound attack dog is in the window ferociously growling at...
Ooh.
I believe probably some sparrows eating food. So I'm going to make him leave.
Yeah, how dare they?
Thank you, sorry, living with dogs, huh? Love them.
I mean, I know.
Anyway, as far as the idea of this kind of 15-degree window, I think it makes sense, right? Most things, and particularly when we think about Uranus in general, because a lot of people think about Uranus as being this instantaneous event that kind of upsets everything, that comes out of nowhere and turns things on their head, right? But mm-hmm. usually what Uranus actually is doing is breaking a tension that's been building for a while, right? If we think mm-hmm. about lightning, it doesn't just come out of nowhere. The charge builds in the clouds, and then the culmination point is the actual strike of lightning, right?
Yeah, and if you think about it, like the other kind of anus.
My anus.
Similarly, you know.
Yeah.
One builds up to the ultimate moment that you're looking for. You can't just like have things happen right away. I mean, you can, some people can, but for the most part,
mm-hmm.
Uranus is a really a gradual build.
Well, yeah, going in and out too, right? There's an explosion coming out. It didn't come from nowhere. It's that rice you left on the counter for a day and a half. So all that to say, yeah, we had this culmination point yesterday, but... Listeners, we're recording on the day after 420. 420. But, you know, Uranus and Jupiter have been in orb of one another since actually June of last year, like within that 15-degree range. And they're going to continue to be within that range up into July of this year. So it's a process. But I don't know. What do you feel like you've been seeing happening around themes of higher education, broadening experiences?
I feel like the student movement has been building over time, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that what we're seeing right now, and like those of us who are plugged into particular algorithms or in the streets, is like a wildfire of student resistance, yeah. right? But I think that it is marked in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the response to Gaza is so tied to a very imminent and present danger and feels so urgent.
Yeah.
Whereas I do feel like there's been organizing at schools since like 2016
easily.
In a huge way. Students really... like kind of taking on the message of Black Lives Matter and moving on to form their own justice coalitions. I think that that work branched out and became durational.
Yes.
But for sure, we are seeing a new spark that's like that's rekindling the fires, which is really lovely. Like, I think that sometimes I get in this place where I'm like, why is student activism more valuable to the country than, like, you know, a bunch of like elders chaining themselves to Washington, like to like the fence outside the White House, some of them like Holocaust survivors, you know, like, but at the same time, I know that their organization is part of a history, and divestment is certainly one of the key tools of the resistance.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I was watching a video from Colombia, and, you know, this person was like, I thought of you as like a bunch of privileged assholes, which, like, you are. I mean, he wasn't actually that pejorative.
He's a Palestinian writer, I think.
Yeah, I believe so. And was essentially saying, like, this means something to have people who are in the heart of empire, who have all of the privileges of empire afforded them, and are willing to give that up for their convictions, you know?
Right. And not, I mean, like, you know, of course, it's like, I can say it both ways. I'm like talking on two sides of my mouth, but
of course,
it, you know, cause I'm a Libra, Mercury Mars, but, sorry, but it's also true that, like, that's not the totality of, like, what a student body looks like, right? Even at a super hyper privileged, like, awful, violent institution, that has robbed homes from many people. Where it stands, you know, many people who go to these schools are trying to do right by their families, etc., and take out huge loans, you know, and they, and like in resisting, in encampments, in being suspended, they are also losing something that they've already gone into debt for. So there's, you know, it's, there's a lot of risk that's being taken, not just from like a position of privilege, but actually from a position of great risk.
Yeah.
Like, precarity. A lot of these kids are now unhoused.
Yeah.
Some kids who go to college don't have relationships with their families. Yeah. So when they're unhoused, they have nowhere to go.
Yeah. And, you know, they're becoming unhoused in a housing crisis as well, where the governor of New York just sided with billionaire real estate companies.
And even if they, I mean, even if it, there wasn't one, which of course there is, then where would they get the money? Like, again, many students go into debt and then it's paying for their living and their eating. So it's like all of a sudden you have no money.
And you don't have negative money. And I guess just a thing that I've been thinking about, because the fact is, like, protest movements and student movements have so many different astrological signatures. But I think something important to recognize about why so much activism is germinated in these spaces. Sure, there's access to peers from different backgrounds and other perspectives. You're still in like a colonial structure that props up the bourgeoisie, right? Like, academia is not inherently progressive in any way. It's actually very removed from a lot of direct action. But if we think about the age range of folks in university settings, in this country at least, 18 to 21, 22, 19 to 21, 22, obviously there's continuing education, there's people who come to school early, but juniors and seniors in college across the board are going through their own outer planet transits generationally, right? One of them is a closing square from Saturn, and Dane Rudyard talks about a closing square being a crisis of consciousness, right? Squares are always a point where you have to make a choice to either stay the course or shift. And the crisis of consciousness is, I've seen things come full circle. And with Saturn, it's like, I see what these institutions are actually propping up. I see the limitations. I see the rigid structures. And now I'm confronted with my own complicity and responsibility in this situation. So when you combine that with an opening square from transiting Uranus to your natal Uranus, that is a crisis of action. So my consciousness has become informed by kind of the karma, the residue, the consequences of the decisions made in my name that by this institution that I'm a part of. And now I have an opportunity to take action against that, to break through that. So it's always going to be a time for folks in those situations of some kind of revelation around the role that you're playing in this machine and whether or not you want to continue to abide or if you want to push up against that and try to break through it, right? Which is the Uranian idea, sensibility. But every 14 years, whatever group of people are having these two simultaneous transits also get a boost from Jupiter, conjoining that Uranus and kind of adding more weight, more conviction, more confidence on the side of pushing back, of rebelling. So as far as astrological signatures, I think that's part of the reason that we get these kind of waves where there's a more emboldened populace and also where there's more news spreading about it, right? There's more attention paid because that's also a function of Jupiter. And so it's interesting to kind of look back at the previous iterations and kind of see what was popping up and off around those conjunctions for the last, I don't know, 50, 60 years.
I also wanted to just note that, like, you know, one thing that you're mentioning is their signatures and like sort of their meanings. Of course, it's notable to just talk about Saturn, not in terms of responsibility, but also just in terms of time, right? Like being cognizant of time. And then with Uranus, there's a sense of like frameworks, troubling frameworks, crumbling frameworks. And when you have young people at that intersection, right, they're thinking about how certain kinds of structures, societal structure, is going to affect them over time. Like their consciousness and their cognizance starts to kind of understand the framework from a perspective that's not just present moment, but both historical and future seeing, forward thinking. And they have a conception of time, I think, at this age. Like if you think about the way time moves for us as we get older, it gets super, super, super fast, right? It's just sort of like, you're like a year. I saw you a year ago. I thought it was like last month, you know, like as you, like with age, like time starts to shrink. But I think that like around that particular age range, time hasn't quite shrunk yet. So you can see like how long something is going to take and you can see the trouble ahead. And it feels like you can measure it in a very like strategic way. So there's this element of possibility and hope in that as well, you know? And I do think that like, we're like, as we talk about this from like a planetary perspective, it's worth noting that like from, you know, no matter what background these young people have, for the most part, college is one of the few times in life, if you are in a university, that you can just commit your days to expanding your consciousness. Like you don't have to like come home to your family and negotiate them or like individuate. You can like, you don't have to do that stuff. So you can choose to be around people, but you can choose it. You can like, you can choose to learn things that are completely your own election, right? So it's like, whereas in high school, there are requirements that are very particular. In college, you have some requirements, but by and large, a lot of the courses you take are courses that you decided to take. So there's this element of like learning space to grow your idea of the world. And that is seated with that cognizance, right, of time and structure and how it gets built out. So it seems to me that like in moments when Jupiter strikes, the other element of Jupiter is sort of just like globalization, right? So there's that spread, like all of a sudden you can see the network. Like I think it's for young people, a lot of times, unless they're raised in those kind of communications, they often get access to that visualization of how things creep, how things spread, how they ultimately poison their water, or how they affect their life when they graduate.
I think that's an excellent point, and also hits on the idea of Uranus giving us the capacity to really synthesize information and identify patterns pretty quickly and miraculously as well, you know, to kind of be like, oh shit, okay, this is how all that's happening. And you also speak to foresight, which again, many, if not most, modern astrologers associate Uranus more with Prometheus mythologically than the actual sky god, right? And so there is this idea, you know, if you, particularly if you're somebody coming from a less privileged background into an Ivy League school, say, right? There is a sense of standing between worlds. You're not one of the gods or the powerful elite, but this knowledge is pulling you out from where you came from. And then you have a choice, like, should I steal fire from them and give it to the people that I feel compassion for and connection to? Which does not come without some kind of punishment, right? But recognizing that what you risk by refusing to kind of cross the gods or tempt fate is losing your own humanity.
Or saving your humanity. So what about, I think you were going to give me a little history lesson.
Well, just kind of looking at movements that came up and around these periods with Jupiter and Uranus coming together. So obviously right now we're seeing the divestment movement and solidarity with Palestinians. But if we go back another 14 years, you know, 2010 to 2011 was the previous Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. We saw the Occupy movement, which obviously was galvanizing in the preceding years. We also saw in Great Britain huge amounts of student protests against a fee hike. If we go back to the previous one in 1997, there were massive student movements in Belgrade and Serbia. In 1983, huge anti-nuclear protests, including in the British countryside, like people linking arm and arm and taking over huge swaths, miles and miles of a human chain. And then, of course, when we go back to like 1968, 1969, we have the Summer of Love. We also have a rare triple conjunction where we have Uranus, Pluto, and Jupiter all conjoining together, setting off massive anti-war protests and also setting off the gay rights movement, right, with Stonewall. We see all kinds of shit popping off and can also understand that, right, okay, Uranus is actually the key player in the protest movements, and then these other planets kind of come into and out of phase with that and determine where things are happening and around what issues.
I could see that.
We go back further in 1954 to 1955. That's when the Montgomery bus boycott was being organized. And then 1941 is the last time that the two planets conjoined in Taurus like they are right now. Peace demonstrations, the May Revolt, right? There's war protests at Harvard. There's a February strike in the Netherlands. So we do get this kind of surge of activity, this surge of kind of confidence and conviction around these conjunctions. But there is this interesting legacy. And obviously there was protest continuing in between, right? It's not like this is the only time, but these kind of flashpoints where there's a lot of attention being given and where there seems to be something being galvanized and some kind of momentum and something set in motion for the next 14, 15 years.
So what do you think has been set in motion for the next 15 years today?
I mean, I think that there's like a reignition of distrust for the state and recognizing that authorities are not inherently here to protect or provide for us. And I think that what fascism seems to kind of overlook is the less people have to lose, the less people have to lose. Like,
yeah, they don't know about that.
They don't seem to. They don't seem to remember that. And so to me, I think it's pretty cool to see Ivy League students say, nah, fuck you. We're not scared. Arrest us. Yeah. We'll sleep in tents. Like, whatever. And, you know, not for nothing, this current batch of folks going through their opening Uranus square, they have Uranus and Aquarius. You know, they were born around Y2K, this promise of technology and the way that it was going to expand our worlds and make things easier, which is always kind of the promise of technology. And then it turns out that because capitalism is involved, they're just going to find more ways to exploit workers. But I think there's something interesting around
refurbished.
Exactly. Around the square between Taurus and Aquarius, right? Because Aquarius is like big ideas. And then Taurus is like, okay, but what are the material consequences of this? What are the ways that like we've massively disrupted our environment and made everything literally poison? You know, I'm not here to be like, it's on you guys, save us. Like, we all need to work together. And it's like pretty atrocious what has been left to Gen Z.
Gen Z.
And I know, right? There's none after that.
I was like, Gen Z is like, they're in their late 20s.
Okay, regardless, folks who are 21 now were born in the late degrees of Uranus and Aquarius, which would have been early 2000s. All that to say, that is a pretty powerful placement, Uranus and Aquarius, as far as finding new ways to kind of organize, push back, rebel, and also kind of invert and repolarize these systems that have been pushing down and surveilling and manipulating information and people.
Rose, what are our anuses in?
We are of a generation of Sagittarius. Just kidding. Uranus, we actually were born around 1987, right? Are we both 87, folks?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have both Saturn and Uranus in Sagittarius kind of catching up to each other. I think you were probably born a little closer to the conjunction than I was.
Well, what do you think about, I just kind of wanted to be like, what's the diff?
What's the diff between Uranus and Sagittarius?
Yeah, like what's our Uranus signature, our Sagittarius?
I mean, we were changing the relationship to education and expansion and also to religion and spirituality, right? If you think about our generation and the way that many of our generation like relate to organized religion, I think there's a lot. It seems like we broke out of something around that, around the kind of Sagittarian signatures, which are like philosophy and exploration and also trying to tie everything together and find meaning. Sagittarius also rules gurus, mentors, teachers, right? It's a Jupiter ruled sign. And so I think that there's something about...
we're just like the coach generation.
Kind of, but I think we're also the generation of like, fuck it, I'm going to teach myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's our signature as far as I can tell. But with Saturn in the mix, there's a little more withholding, a little more fear of fully breaking out. Whereas a lot of these folks actually were also born with Saturn in Taurus, right? Like Saturn was in Taurus from, I think, 2000 to 2003. And so if you're 21 right now, you've got Uranus on your natal Saturn squaring your natal Uranus. So there's more pressure and tension to break through. And I think less willingness to kind of wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Because you have a sense of your own will.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting time to be alive. And that is me trying to detach all emotion from it.
As you were talking, one other thing I thought about and within all these themes is how I just feel like our generation was really still invested in like the hope of what institutions could do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like there are ways in which we were the last generation to do that. In some ways, Gen Z also had to grapple with some of it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if you think about us graduating into the recession, right? Yeah. And like how people's ideas about the jobs they were going to have and that they were guaranteed if they followed like this institutional path were just completely dashed, right? Like everyone's just like, if you just do da 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 da, like then you'll get like beep, you know, and like, and you just got to put all of your money, all your time, all your energy into like these like guaranteed steps.
Yeah.
So we were really, you know, baited.
Yes.
And also on the hook in a way, like I think education got way more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it was like the requirement, when we were graduating. Like, it was still this thing where it's like, if you don't do this, you're not going to get this. And that's just it, you know? And I think that for a lot of our generation, that was like the truth, you know? Like, a lot of those like TV shows around that time were like, you're not going to college, you know? Like, you're not going to finish school. You know, it was so like you're doomed, and once you do this, like you're just set. And so there's like that was one example, right? Which I think that like the generations after us just exploded all open. They were like, I could just have a YouTube channel. There's just a lot more of like risk taking and like carving your own path in this big, big way, and like kind of just being complete innovators. Like, it's just a really like, I think there's people in our generation who are innovators, but as a generation, I think that Gen Z was just like, you know what I'm gonna fucking do? And then simultaneously, in turn, like I'm talking about it, like, you know, kind of like that maturing age where you're just like dashed in that way. But, you know, I also think about how my first year of high school was 9/11. Like, and we grew up inside the quote unquote war on terror. And there was something about our generation, which I think, like, or I was watching a lot of people slowly lose their faith in the institutions that they thought worked. But it wasn't like right away. Like, I think we were still inside of it. Like, I saw people so happy that Obama got elected, and I was like, but he's pro-war. But he's sending more troops to Afghanistan, and like that's what he campaigned on. Like, he campaigned on being pro-war, and people still just being like, oh, representation, or like, oh, but this is like a good Democrat versus a bad Democrat, you know, whatever.
Cool Reagan.
And a bad Democrat is a Democrat, I guess. I think in those times where it was like somebody who we already know is a warmonger from before because they've been around, like Hillary, as opposed to somebody who promises they'll be a warmonger later. You know? But I think that like slowly over the course of those years, people were like, oh shit, right? What is our two-party system, for instance? Like, what the fuck is that? But I feel like the generations younger than us have just been raised into that. So at this point, although they're very active and they do a lot of work, they're also just sort of like none of the, like they are just so, like so more casually and so much more widespreadly, like none of these institutions work. And like, I don't cape for any of them.
Well, and I was just thinking about how that period also was when Pluto was coming through Sagittarius, which means that it was revealing to those of us who are still under the influence of those institutions what was actually at their core and the ways that power had coalesced and condensed and has forever, and also just kind of, an opportunity to, should we have the courage to look, peek under the mask, right? See who the great and powerful Oz really is. And it's just three corporations in a trench coat. And two
Three
out of three of them
empires in
are,
a trench coat.
yeah, it's just like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and BP in a trench coat.
It's just Israel, Britain, and America in a trench coat.
Exactly. And like, don't forget the Catholic Church.
I'm like, all church? Okay, but whatever.
Having a relationship with God, totally cool. Having a centralized governing fascistic force in its name, not very cool.
No.
No.
I love how, is God it's, is that God's pronoun?
Yeah, God is it they.
Beautiful.
God is plural.
For sure.
So the kids, they're all right. The kids are going through a Uranus square and a Saturn square, and Jupiter is pumping up the volume, and it does that every 14 years. And it's important because it does kind of feel like we need this kind of reinvigoration or resuscitation, right?
Okay, but what about if you're not kids and you don't care about kids, then what? Like, what's your, like, what about
You have to.
all?
You have to, you actually have to. If you care about humanity, you have to care about young people because they're going to have to deal with the karma of all your action or inaction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's say you do care about the kids.
Okay. But you're not one.
But you're not one.
Yeah.
What is an elder's place? An elder being like, say, somebody in their 40s. Mm. What is a Gen X, Zillennials place in all this?
To provide resources and support and to try to model a life that young folks want to grow into.
Mm. You're like, I don't even need a planetary explanation. That's just the only fucking thing you gotta do.
Well, I mean, there's more than that, but like, it's our job to like listen and learn and also like have compassion because kids are also fucking annoying, right? We know everything when we're 21.
Mm-hmm. It's really true. God, why didn't anyone tell us we didn't know anything?
I think they try to all the time.
I know. It's so funny. Do you feel like now at this point in my life, I don't know anything all the time. Like someone's just like, what's the shade of red? I'm like, could be mauve. I have no idea. Leave me alone. I don't know anything. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. That's how you know you're aging
gracefully. Why does knowing
nothing
get easier as you age?
I think you start to realize that the more dangerous people are the ones who know everything.
Mm. Wow. I wonder what aspect of you gave that answer. Because I would feel like, for me, if somebody asked me that, I would just say, it's because you like keep uncovering different shades. I think that unless you're raised with it in some capacity when you're younger, there's just element of like, I know the truth, forget all other truths. Mm-hmm. Like I see it, I witness it. That is all there is to experience, like to mm-hmm. an experience mm-hmm. is to just behold. But I think like with time, you realize that there's another aspect of one experience, which is time, you know? So mm-hmm. all of a sudden, like you have that, you've had time on something where you can say, huh, I always thought it was like this, but now 5 years out, I know it was like that. And then like 7 years later, you could be like, actually, it was like that, but it was also like fucking this. And so like you start to realize that you have three truths about something that when you were like 20, you were like, nah, it's only one way.
I mean, I guess it's also, yeah, that. Listen, Einstein, right about some stuff. One of those things, everything's relative, right? And so
stupid. I can't believe you. I can't.
I know. But what I'm saying is the older you get, the more experience you have, the more you have to compare against, the more complex and nuanced things become. Mm-hmm. And also, I do think one thing that has not gotten more complicated is like my moral and ethical compass. I think that those mm-hmm. feel much clearer and crisper than they ever did when I was a younger person. Like the mm-hmm. ability to recognize when something's just fucking wrong. Mm-hmm. I feel way clearer about that than I did when I was younger.
I feel like when I was young, I could tell when something was fucking wrong. What I didn't have capacity for is to really understand sometimes the full story mm-hmm. of like how things got that wrong mm-hmm. and like sort of the mundane steps. Like I felt like I was just more like evil, period.
I see.
Like is rad, except when if you can be that hard, like if you can have such a hard stance and just be like, this is evil, period, mm-hmm. and like comes from evil, just this evil blank, nothing more interesting than that. I think that you can run at risk of somebody swaying in the other direction because it's like you don't live in gradients.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone has a good enough case, that's it, right? Yeah. You can't just kind of like add, okay, well, that case is good enough.
Yeah.
For something, but it still stands in the shadow of this. Like they can stand together.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes you're easier swayed. And now I'm not easier swayed.
Yeah.
Now as I've gotten older, I can be like, this end result is evil, period.
Yes. Yeah.
You know? And also what you're saying, I accept how that's true for you.
Yeah.
I can see it and I can even recognize it, but that doesn't change the larger picture.
Yeah.
But then what about boomers? Because they're old, and some of them are Susan Sarandon by Queen. But some of them are like
Biden. Oh,
Juliana
God. True.
Margulies. Okay.
I do want to rewind for 1 second just to respond to what you were speaking to, because I think what you're describing is a capacity to separate actions and behaviors from individuals who are different than institutions, right? And so I think that, like, many, if not most, of the institutions that hold power currently just are, like, profoundly and inherently unethical, amoral, and evil. I do not think that most people are inherently evil. And I think that it's easier for me to identify actions and behaviors that are just like, yep, that's wrong. That shouldn't have happened. That doesn't mean I can't understand how you got there. That doesn't mean I can't understand the complexity of what you've experienced and the ways that you have come to believe this is your only choice.
And that really gives, I feel like maybe that's good for the wrongdoers or the harmful people that one encounters, but ultimately I find that it is the best medicine for being on this planet is to be able to be like, no, not everybody is like under the will of like a cruel god. No. Like there are people who are really evil, but they are in fact the minority. And even if someone is doing something evil, that doesn't mean everybody I've ever met is actually evil and I should leave the planet. It's like I feel like being able to reckon with how like somebody very violent could also be very lovely. And like just knowing that, like being able to have like the sense of like humanity is incredibly complex is a good way of, it's like good medicine for actually like staying on the planet. Because otherwise you might just look around and be like, fuck this.
Well, and recognizing how the role that conditioning and environment play, like if we can recognize the conditions and environments that lead to like what we see as inherently immoral or unethical behavior, then perhaps we can also recognize what kind of conditions we could try to create to help encourage, if not kind of elicit more good. More kindness, more compassion, more empathy, more problem solving, right? Which then gives us more
Cults.
agency and hope. Yeah.
Which then gives us cults.
It's true. It can give us cults. This is true, you know? And some of those are just coda, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really still waiting to get invited to my cool cult. Haven't stepped into the quagmire yet, but haven't come upon it in the bog.
But yeah, I guess I do kind of want to return to this question of how do we end up with Susan Sarandon and Juliana Margulies?
I don't know if they're the same age, but they seem the same age.
I think Juliana Margulies is actually in her second Saturn return, and I think that Susan Sarandon is in her sixth Jupiter return.
What's their age difference?
I bet it's about 14 years, actually.
I was like,
Let's find
you're
out
like a
though.
mathematician.
I am.
Juliana Margulies is 57. That actually makes her Gen X. So maybe that's one of the.
Yeah.
It's like, what's happening?
What's happening in the bisexuals?
Wow, Susan Sarandon looks so good. She is 77. You know what I'm saying?
She's
Like,
20 years older than Juliana Margulies, but
they look the
this proves that being a good person helps you stay hot in your 70s.
Absolutely.
Maybe it's a shallow reason to try to be a good person,
Well,
but
who are the other people who are saying fucked up shit? Like Chelsea Handler?
Chelsea Handler is also Gen X.
Yeah, so I'm like, wait a minute, the forgotten generation.
These white women.
Well, actually, it's like we're dancing around because Chelsea Handler, I guess, is 47. No, she's 49. 49, and
Okay.
then Juliana Margulies is 57,
So we have a.
and Susan Sarandon is 77. So
Okay.
just, yeah. So I don't know. It's just everybody.
It's just
It's
every. I
not
mean.
just, it's not Gen X, it's not boomers, it's just every fucking body.
Well, Susan Sarandon then is coming into a closing Saturn square before her third Saturn return and coming into a Uranus return. Chelsea Handler's in her Chiron return, and Julianne Margulies is in her second Saturn return, alongside, people who are doing much better things like Tracy Chapman.
So do you think that like a Uranus return is like for some people in their 70s is a place where they might get reconnected with some of that energy that they once had for social change?
I would imagine so, yeah. I mean, like I don't know how you can approach your Uranus return and not like look back on your life and really think about legacy, particularly with the closing Saturn square approaching as well, right? There's something there around like, okay, even if I exercise a lot and eat macrobiotic, like I do know I'm entering the last chapters, and so this is really a time for me to like figure out like what kind of note do I want to leave on.
Yeah, cats in the cradle, you know, silver spoon.
But yeah, it is interesting. I'm also like, I think that that is a nodal return, actually. I think that Susan Sarandon is coming, and that is the closest. Her Saturn square is actually a couple years off, and her Uranus return is 7 years from now.
All
Anyway,
right. What is there to live for?
gay stuff.
Gay stuff.
I
That's true.
still love being gay. The gay little people in our phones, I think, would really love to hear about the big gay movie that came out this eclipse season.
If you're talking about the case to melodrama that is Love Lies Bleeding.
I am talking about the violent, horny Aries eclipse season, eclipse on top of her fucking natal sun, case to film. Yes, I am.
Did you see It's all on me then, is it?
I thought we could still have fun with it. Not having seen it has never stopped me from having an opinion on things or trying to guess stuff. So I thought maybe we could find a way to engage with this film, even if only one of us has a real lived experience with its content.
Okay, so would you like to play Two Truths and a Lie?
I would love to play Two Truths and a Love Lies Bleeding with you.
Stupid.
I
Again.
am! Yes, I'd love to play Two Truths and a Lie. Do you want to explain
Okay.
how this game works in case anybody has lived under a rock their whole life?
What I'm going to do is I am going to offer Rose two truths about the movie and one lie. And Rose has to guess which one is the lie. And I'll just do a couple that are like themed around the movie, and we'll see how Rose does.
This one's really good. And I also want to say, obviously, there's some spoilers here. So if you haven't seen it, you can play along with me, but then you might be disappointed. I never care if I know what happens in something.
I personally do not feel like there are spoilers.
Whoa.
Because I tried my
Oh.
best to only offer things that would be surmisable to anybody watching right away. And because I want Rose to have fun when we go out and see it. Love Lies Bleeding, which can be taken both as a full sentence and as an assortment of words, has elements of the movie, one, The Incredible Hulk, two, a Coen Brothers film called Blood Simple, or three, Desert Hearts. Which one is the lie?
Incredible Hulk.
No.
Is this because that person has cut off jean shorts and is ripped?
It's a part of it, sure. Not the whole thing.
Okay, so then I guess it's Desert Hearts is a lie, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I
Yeah.
threw it in there because it's like, you got
Queer
two
bait.
people. Yeah, it's a bit two lesbians in the desert. If that were the only elements for something having elements of something, then that's all it is.
Yeah.
But the storyline is, and just the character is also different. So,
All right. Okay. All right. Thanks, Gala. What's next?
Okay. So, in Love Lies Bleeding, Lou and Jackie's first erotic contact is one, Lou giving Jackie a steroid prick in the butt. Two, the two homos sharing a cigarette in the dark. Or three, Jackie jerking off for Lou so she can see, quote, how she does it.
Okay, wait, am I supposed to figure out which one it is, or are two
Which
of
one
them
is the
part of the
lie?
same thing? Okay.
So the question, I guess, in which one of these is the lie when it comes to their first erotic contact?
Okay, so there's steroid prick, jacking off, and a cigarette in the dark. Cigarette in the dark.
The lie is the jerking off for Lou so she can see how she does it. That is not their first erotic contact.
Okay, all right. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. So there's a cigarette and some steroid and some words.
Yeah, it's kind of in the same scene-ish. And to me, it felt like both could be true about their first erotic contact. Like you can kind of see that moment of like shared,
Okay.
vice as a moment of erotic contact, or you could think of Lou giving Jackie an injection as a first erotic contact.
Okay, all right, okay. What's next?
Okay. So I don't know if her name is pronounced Caddy or Katie, because I
Okay.
feel like sometimes people do both for the way that's spelled.
Mm-hmm.
But Caddy O'Brien or Katie O'Brien, who plays Jackie, these are two truths and a lie about Caddy O'Brien, was a cop for 7 years, underwent major bowel surgery while shooting the film, is single and ready to mingle.
She's not single and ready to mingle. She is married. She is married. Her wife calls her sex on a skeleton.
Is that true? Did you do some research?
The only research I did. I was just trying to figure out what was happening. I was like, are K-Stew and Katie O'Brien actually fucking? And then I was like, I
That's really
guess
great
not.
because my next question, which I guess you'll have the answer to, is did K-Stew and Katie O'Brien ever hook up in real life? Do you want me to give you the options? One, hell yeah, when the stage lights turn off, the heat only rises. Two, as far as we know, monogamy has its claws in this dike, and these dikes, and they are vowed to others. Three, Aries and Aquarius is an erotically confusing combo that best works in friendships.
I think that B is true, but I actually don't agree with C.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, I think that we need to remember that there's a lot of Aquarians who have Pisces placements and a lot of Aries who have Taurus placements. And if those two aren't horny for each other, I don't know who is.
I don't know. Have you ever seen it work out?
Yeah. I had two friends who are like getting married who are like so horny maniacs for each other.
That's really beautiful. I love hearing about horny maniacs.
This makes sense. This makes sense.
Thank you. Okay. Next, two truths and a lie. These actors are often in queer movies, but are not out as far as we know. One, Jenna Malone. Two, Kiki Palmer. Three, Anna Baryshnikov.
Only one of them isn't out.
These actors are often in queer movies, but are not out as far as we know.
Think Anna Barishnikov is not out. I know that Kiki
So
Palmer has talked about being queer.
I feel like I've said this in a way that's
It
confusing,
is.
but to be clear, these actors are straight. They're often in queer movies, but they're straight. So that would be two of them would be true, but one of them would be the lie.
Oh, that Jenna Malone and Anna Barishnikov.
Which is wild. So Anna Barishnikov was in Dickinson.
Just licking the envelope for a, just licking the envelope for a hint of their her taste. Right? Isn't that a Dickinson line from a letter?
I love you being this gay. So there's another version of Dickinson Gay, which is a TV show that's pretty recent. Like it came out in the past few years. Which is centered around like a teenage Emily Dickinson, and it's very, very queer. And Anna Barishnikov plays Susan. And Jenna Malone, as we know, has been playing so many queer roles so long. She's often like a queer side character, like the queer best friend. There's just varieties of queer Jenna Malone, but as far as we know, both of these actors
She may not
were
have
straight.
gay face, but she has a bi-eye, you know?
Chaotic
Stupid.
bisexual energy.
Yes.
Okay. And this is my last two
All
truths and a lie. Who is the real monster of this movie? One, Daisy, a flouncy girl who won't get out of K2's jock. Two, addiction as an inescapable force. Three, a man with a skullet and a mountain crevasse full of corpses.
right. Okay, I think you're talking about Ed Helms. Okay, Ed Harris. I meant Ed Harris, but I called him Ed Helms, the skullet guy. I think that's his name. I think that him and addiction are bad, and I don't think that Daisy exists.
Daisy does exist.
Is she the
Played
real
by Anna
monster?
Barishnikov.
Oh, okay.
But yes, correct. Addiction and a man with a skullet are the true monsters of
I
this
like how they were
film.
just like, you know what does not get called back to from Rocky Horror Picture Show enough?
The
Fucking
skullet.
riffraff skullet. Let's resurrect that shit right here, right now. So, listeners, what followed is about an 8-minute digression on skullets, which you're welcome to listen to if you care to. It'll just be at the end of the episode after the credits. There has been a cultural messaging for at least the last 40 or 50 years that there is something a little weird going on when we see that. Whether or not that's fair, whether or not that's ethical, it clearly has imprinted upon us for several generations running now.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. Okay, so outside of the skullet, which has a role and a distinct character inside of Love Lies Bleeding, this movie is amazing. And it's so fun to watch Kristen Stewart just play more and more gay characters. I think that it's just fun to let to kind of like see people explore themselves on camera. Like in some ways, I know that she's playing a role, but I think there's this element of like trying on queerness that some of us have to do over the course of 20 years, and like different kinds of queerness, different kinds of genders, different kinds of like self-expressions, and like Casey just gets to do that in the movies now, in front of us, which is kind of fun. Katie O'Brien is so hot. Practically AI. Like, it's like you can't, it's sometimes hard to look at the screen. Like, the heat burns your eyes. And so, there's like some sex scenes that I am just really grateful for. I mean, obviously, because I'm a pervert, but also because there haven't been a lot of sex scenes or like sexy scenes in queer movies for a long while. In fact, I know this is untrue. I know this is untrue. And I'm not talking about like true indie film guys. Like, I'm just like not at the Angelica like that. But as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, I would love a correction. I have the last time that I feel like I was privy to like a sort of like full-on sex scene in a movie, and you know, like in that way where like everybody knows people are fucking. In a contemporary, like, as opposed to like, we're wearing petticoats and something's gonna like be happening under them. I feel like since blue is the warmest color,
I was thinking about
like,
that too when you were described. Like, they had a literal prosthetic vulva in that
just like, I feel like that was the last time I remember being like, oh yeah, there's like gay fucking that's like happening in this like major movie. Maybe there's been some others since, I just can't recall.
I feel like there was kind of this shying away of like, queers, we're just like you. We just want to get married. We can imply it. And like more of a focus on like normalizing queerness and making it very boring. While at the same time, like boring straight sex scenes are getting more and more explicit.
Yeah.
Like, think about
But it's
Euphoria.
like,
Think about how many fucking teenagers we had to watch
yeah.
fucking for a couple of years. Very disturbing. Very disturbing for me.
It was fucking disturbing. I was also like working with teens at the time. It's really strange, even though I care about them all.
Of
I love
course.
those kids.
And not that I don't think that they're doing that, but also just like there's something that doesn't feel good about breaking that fourth wall. Speaking of blue is the warmest color, to be quite honest.
Well, yeah.
But I have a question for you, as somebody who has seen this movie. Do you think there's a little bit of a conversation or like a picking up of the baton of this film from Bound?
You know, good question.
The mob, Dyke Caper.
I
Violent.
will say that I did not put Bound on that list of the elements for that reason, because there's a Bonnie and Clyde aspect, which Bound kind of is, right?
Totally.
So I think that that is true. I would say that it gets to live with Bound, and it might also get to live with like Fatal Attraction. In a sense of like a thriller that's queer, you know, like there's, because it's, I think Bound is less of a thriller. Like it's just kind of noir, but it's not necessarily a thriller in the same way, like if you think about it.
Right, because all the action actually takes place in that apartment building, pretty much.
But it's also like a lot of it is a tension that leads up to an action that may or may not occur. It's not like, I think a lot of thrillers, and I'm not saying it's not, you can't touch that genre, you can touch it, but I think that when I think of a thriller, I think of something that is like a constant state, right? So you're under constant threat. And I think a good majority of Bound is not that, you know?
Yeah, there's it's probably that last 30 minutes. It's really intense and you're not sure if they're gonna make it.
Exactly. I would say that there's a lot of this movie that's a thriller. So, I mean, it's you know, obviously advertised as a thriller, but I would say it also, just FYI, is one. You know, like it is, which is again like, you know, very special for the queer genre, as we're kind of like coming to and we're speaking. You know, there are few and far between genres that are made with a queer audience in mind, right? I mean, there are plenty of thrillers that like take a piss on fucking trans people for
Of
sure.
course,
But there are very few thrillers that have like centered a queer gaze in some way or another, and this is definitely one of
Great. Sounds good.
them.
Sounds like a real gift.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I came out and I was like, great, fantastic, super fun to watch. And you know, as people who have listened, and as you yourself know, Rose, like I'm just very choosy when it comes to movies. And I will say, just as a caveat, that there are things that I did not necessarily love or I had questions about. Like there were definitely moments where I was like, you know, but overall, it was such a joyride.
Cool. Sounds good. Everybody go see it safely if you can. That's why I haven't seen it. I only had one opportunity where I was by a theater and I was home with my parents and then had to make up a guest room instead.
Oh, well. You'll see it. You'll see it soon enough.
I will. I will. It'll come. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Tell people, ask people, demand?
Just the free Palestine. I'm like, please, Dyke listeners, 800 of you. No, I mean, I think that I just want people who are taking a little break from whatever's happening in their day to listen to us, to know that the world that you want is worth fighting for, even if you don't get to live in it.
Susan Sarandon knows. Free them all. Fuck Empire. Well, I think we did something today.
We had a blooper reel called Skullet.
Oh my gosh. Skullet bonus. Skullet bonus episode coming at you.
You'll put that on our Patreon. I know you've been waiting 2 years for content here that's just exclusive, but here is a reel about a skullet.
That you may or may not find offensive and rude.
Yeah, but it's called the offensive reel about a skullet.
Yeah, so don't say we didn't warn you.
Yeah, no. Hateful reel, skullets.
Spoiler alert!
What if we just like started recording hateful reels?
Oh, I could go. But then
just like pick like a very mundane topic, and then that's just like hateful reel. It's like hateful
cold
reel.
Speculum.
Nonstick pans.
Exactly.
If it's nonstick, then why does it do that to the eggs?
Anyway, Gala, do you want people to find you anywhere or do anything?
Do anything. Well, I already told people what they got to do.
Yeah, you did.
Gonna make sure the Palestine is free in a lifetime.
Yep.
I am around. You can find me on Instagram, but we have to have like a mutual for me usually to friend me. So otherwise, I'm private. Sorry. Or you have to like send me a message. Most people don't. So you can't really, really find me on Instagram. But if you wanted me to do a tarot reading for you, I'm on queerhealers.com. You can find me there. Otherwise, you can find me in the streets.
It's true. You can. And yeah, I'm online more than I wish I was. I have a website. I'm still taking new clients.
Get a reading from Riz. Mm-hmm.
Also, I am launching a Substack in May and moving my newsletter over there. And I'm going to start doing monthly horoscopes. First ones will be about what Jupiter in Gemini will mean for your sign. So.
Wait, who are you doing monthly horoscopes for?
Myself on a Substack.
Yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm moving my newsletter over there. Substacking. So look out. There'll be bonus podcast episodes and more creative writing that is somewhat tied into astrology. So it should be fun.
Mm-hmm. And do you guys know that Rose has another podcast?
I do. It's true. It's called Mutual Reception. It's half interviews where I interview people who are really good at something that I don't know how to do and ask them about it. And then they ask me about astrology, which is pretty fun.
That sounds cool. Mm-hmm.
And then
I bet
also,
it's pretty gay too.
It's pretty gay. Almost everybody's gay, actually, now that I think about it. And then every other week, it's just the forecast for what the hell's going on. And we love you gays. Gays, guys, dolls, whoever you are. However you name yourself. If you're here, you're queer.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? If you have a skullet, then respect to you.
Yeah.
You're persevering.
Forgive us. Forgive us our trespasses against you. Please.
Yes. Yes.
It's not our fault. Big Dyke Energy is mixed and recorded by Rose Blakelock and features original music by Knight of Cups. Stick around for the Skullet Reel, if you dare.
something sort of menacing about the skeleton because it's like the hair is dead, but it clings.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it kind of just feels like...
like death's hands creeping up the back of your neck.
And like just a real refusal to submit to the natural way.
But you know, when babies are born, they also kind of have skeletons sometimes.
It's true. And I guess like there's a way where like you can just do what you want, you know, but it just...
just do what you want.
There's something about it that for whatever reason is universally unsettling, and maybe it's not fair, right?
Like, I think it's fair because just cut it. Like anyone can cut it. Like yeah. It's not unsettling if you were just bald.
Yeah, it's true. Which is, I think, just being real about what's happening. It's like holding on to a dream that's long past.
You know what I also think? And let me know if I'm wrong. I feel like a skeleton is more menacing than like a little rat tail.
Definitely.
Like, you know, like certain kinds of like hippie dudes who just have that sort of like bald little braid. And like, I think that those dudes with a little braid, if they unwove the hair and they were bald with the long hair, that's more menacing. It's not just about the amount. It's about the style.
Yeah. Well, because I also feel like the thing about growing out your hair is that it's supposed to be like a testament to the health of your hair. And so it feels like just drawing extra attention to the frailty. But I don't know if this is like ableist in some way.
I'm just thinking about like so many other things with this podcast and being like, and then they just spend like 15 minutes.
And they're just being so mean about the skeleton. But it's clear, what I want to say is that the skeleton was clearly a decision that was made to elicit a certain response, right? And we did not create the environment that elicits that response to that particular style.
Within us, it's an aversion. Mm-hmm. I recognize that. An aversion that maybe, you know, is deeply personal. Aversions are not truths. They are only experiences.
You know what it feels like to me? It just feels like a refusal to acknowledge and commit to your true nature. It's kind of like, you know, we know gay people who are still trying to be straight. This is a bald person who is still trying to have hair. And it's like, just give in, daddy. Like, it'll feel better.
What if that is their state? Like, what if the state of the skeleton is a liminal state? Like, you know, what if it's not that they are not accepting that they're bald or that they're clinging to having hair? They are clinging to having a little hair.
But what if they're actually just in the liminal state between alive and corpse?
Right.
Yeah. They're like not...
like a baby.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm like, is it mean? Like, is this mean? Yes. Yeah. You know, and this does bring back into question, we really need to think about this, as is it unethical for us to laugh at the skeleton? I guess I'm just kind of like, it's rude to make
the
fun
fact of a skeleton.
I'm like, it's not okay to make fun of people for something that they cannot help. That's just part of who they are. Is the skeleton a choice or simply just nature taking its course?
I mean, a little bit of both.
It's a little bit of both.
Right? Because there are some people who also, like, don't cut their hair.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it depends on how it's coiffed, huh?
Yeah.
Because I'm also like, do you shave your beard or not? Right?
So you're saying if it's a... what's a skeleton and a beard? Is that like an angelfish?
It's a helipad, you know, actually. It's a hot plate.
I think you have to, like, what the fuck is that? It's like a Roomba. Or like, what's the, like, Is there like something like a Roomba, but it's a mop? Like, is there something that goes in a circle and sweeps or mops?
I think we're getting into like octopus territory now.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean, but it's a brush. We're gonna have to edit all of this out, and like, we'll call it like the skullet reel, and then we have to like upload it separate.
Yeah, as bonus material.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we can agree on one fact. The skullet,
what is it?
The skullet was an aesthetic choice meant to elicit a certain response.
Yes.
And it's communicating something specifically creatively.
Specifically creatively, you say?
Oh, creatively, they're trying to communicate something through this choice.
You're like, creatively, they're trying to communicate something specifically. Yeah, that's true. It's absolutely true. Anyway,
I mean, I can
story
think
short.
Of...
Wait, go ahead. Tell me more about what you can think.
Well,
of
I just remembered another skullet that was employed comedically and menacingly in the Scary Movie trilogy. Chris Poloni, who you might remember from There's Something About Mary.
Okay.
He had a skullet when he played a riffraff-esque character who was hosting the
haunted
house. Yeah,
he looked like riffraff, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And I think he even wore a tuxedo. So there is something...